Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with CEO of Metallic Minerals, Greg Johnson. Greg, it's always great having you on the show as we cover all of the Metallic Group of companies. Just as a reminder to folks listening, the Metallic Group has an umbrella over Metallic Minerals, Granite Creek Copper, and Group 10 Metals. But we're focused today on Metallic Minerals, and especially at your Keno Silver project, Greg. Let's start off with a recap of your Phase 1 and your Phase 2 drilling. How did it go this year, and what were the main takeaways that you got from this year's program?
Yeah, it's great to be on the program again, Shad. Exciting year for Metallic Minerals at Keno, biggest program to date. So it's really excited to have worked through the program. Two phases, as you mentioned. The first phase was focused on offset drilling and continuing to expand on the three advanced targets that are moving towards initial mineral inventories and resources. So we're still waiting for assays, but expecting some of those to start coming in here very soon. And visually, basically, we're able to hit the structure stepping out both laterally and down dip. And then the second component of the program was focused on the earlier stage targets, particularly follow-up on the discoveries from 2020. So out on that eastern half of the district, 35-kilometer-long district, you've got Alexco on the west, just gone back into production over the last year. You've had 200 million ounces of past production. You got 100 million ounces in one of the world's highest grade resources in Alexco's operations. And then on our eastern half, same geologic setting, structures continue. We're effectively doing headframe exploration, exploring along these main productive structures. But building on that, in the east, we've gone out and done the first ever groundwork to collect the soils and the geophysics and the mapping and the satellite imagery, and pulling all that together, we identified 12 separate multi-kilometer scale targets out there. This would be silver anomalies. These would be geophysical anomalies. And in 2020, we did the first reconnaissance tests into those. We hit in 26 out of 30 holes. So this year's program out there in the east on the early stage was really designed to go in and say, okay, can we continue to step away from those holes that hit laterally and down dip to start to build geometry and to start to understand the continuity of these structures and what's driving them. And I think one of the things that's exciting for us is the footprint of these things. And some of these anomalies are up to 5 kilometers long, 2 kilometers wide, running up to 100 grams of silver per ton in soils. And that's just a huge footprint. And to have a dozen of those kind of targets is pretty exciting. So we've really made some great strides in our understanding of the geologic system this year. And we're pretty excited about the work we've been putting together, and particularly some of the new tools we've been able to apply.
Well, Greg, focusing on this eastern part of the district that butts up to the mineralogy that Alexco has on their part of the project, why was there not more focus on this side of it earlier from other companies, or was there and they just haven't done modern drilling? It just seems like that would be the most prospective area to start. And as you've mentioned, you've got 5 kilometers of mineralization here and all these targets. Why was there no work done previous to this, or no modern work done?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of factors. I mean, one, the western part of the district has better exposure. So in the early days, it was easier for those, you know, old time miners to actually see the silver vein sticking out of the ground and follow that. And that's where most of the historic production comes. You know, on Alexco's side of the district, they're going deeper. They're having great success at Birmingham, for instance, and continuing to make that into one of the real premier undeveloped and currently being developed silver deposits in the world. On the eastern part of the district, those structures project to surface. And so, you know, the opportunity out here is for us to come into a district, so more forested, lower elevation, so more cover, so it would have been harder for the old-time prospectors. And land status-wise, it was very patchwork land ownership. And so by snapping that together and coming in and applying our modern toolkit for exploration that includes things like, you know, satellite imagery and soil sampling and geophysics, we can see through that cover. So we're targeting things in a way that you couldn't have done as an old-time prospector, and just recognizing, you know, that potential. So in a way, it fits in with this Metallic Group model of identify a district. And particularly if there's an opportunity to put together a large land package that hasn't already been assembled, and then explore along those productive trends in the right geology. And so it's really been a proof of concept in assembling this eastern block, which has taken really decades under the people that we acquired the ground from and then our own work to put this package together.
Greg, in addition to the deep geophysics you're doing on the property, which allows you to kind of see under some of that cover, you've also got another ace up the sleeves in that you brought on a new team member that's got a lot of prior experience in this area. Would you mind unpacking that for the audience, just how that could be another asset to the team?
Yeah, you bet. You know, as we've been assembling the team and advancing the project, we identified an opportunity to bring someone in who originally did his PhD thesis in the district early on in the late 80s and early 90s. So had a chance to intimately become familiar with the historic parts of the district. Went on to spend his career in the oil and gas industry, where they're using a lot of cutting edge technology and geophysics. And then we brought him back into the district. And Dr. Lynch is now really kind of looking at this again from a old home week, but a new perspective. And we're seeing new elements to the geology that really have not been previously recognized. You know, one of the elements we're seeing is of an importance to what we call these thrust fault structures, which are a new potential conduit or area for these high-grade structural deposits to occur. We're seeing different styles of mineralization associated with those, and it's opening up what are basically opportunities for regional scale structures that go through Keno East and could be part of the drivers of why are we seeing such large systems out there in the East. And doing that detailed, you know, structural and stratigraphic mapping across the whole district to understand holistically, you know, the package here. So we're pretty excited. This is really identifying some new exploration targets and understanding for why do we see the style of mineralization we do and why are we seeing it over such wide areas. So it's pretty exciting how it's all coming together.
Well, now, I'm assuming you're still waiting on some of the assays from this drill program to know how to guide future drill programs. But in a general sense, what do you anticipate the plan will be moving forward then to test those thrust fault structures and maybe some of the deeper targets?
Yeah, so results are coming, and we kind of expect it to come in batches. We should see the work at the central part of the district, so that'd be our Caribou and Homestake prospects, which both are moving towards initial resource estimates. Those are advancing. That'll be probably some of the first data we get. And then we'll see this data from the eastern half of the district, and then we'll probably wrap up program with the last phase, which was the focus on the Formo target, where we had those very high-grade hits from 2020, you know, over 2,500 gram per ton silver in some of those hits. So in terms of the overall approach here, you know, we're looking to be able to apply this deep geophysics. It's a technique called induced polarization. This is an electrical method that we use. You can see down to a kilometer from surface. That's exciting because it's never been used in the district before. And with this new geologic context of the thrust faults and the potential for epithermal style mineralization, which is the classic high grade style we see associated oftentimes with porphyry districts, it's starting to suggest the potential for bulk tonnage deposits here. And so applying these tools and techniques for exploration, you know, what we'll be looking to do is take the results from this year's program that built on those initial discoveries from last year, and then going into 2022, see an even more enhanced program that will continue to build these out. You know, with the scale of structure we're seeing zones up to 100 meters in width, which compared to the classic high-grade kenotype system, which is a few meters in width, but very, very high grade, you know, these are big systems, big footprints, and it really fits our target type of really looking for things that have scale that you can measure in kilometers, they make grade that's definitely economic, and have the potential to be a tier one asset for any of the larger silver producers.
Well, Greg, since there seems to be a combination of both the high grade at depth and the bulk tonnage material, both which could be economic, do you envision it being kind of a combination of both, where you may have some at surface open pit potential, but then also some underground mining potential? How do you see that coming together?
Absolutely. And, you know, when we look around the industry at some of the, you know, the most productive mines, they often combine both high grade, selective underground and open pit, you know, because the cost structure on open pit makes it, you know, as much as 10 times less expensive to mine and process. So it's really an advantage if you've got that scale in terms of particularly building large deposits with the open pit. But it's always nice to have these high grade structures that you can selectively mine to really enhance the grade. So, you know, it's looking like we've got the potential for the best of both worlds that way.
A nice 1-2 punch for your Kino Silver project. And you had mentioned or teased a little bit there, you may be working on a resource estimate with some of the more advanced targets like Caribou and Homestake. Do you anticipate doing the 2022 drilling program first before coming out with a resource estimate and maybe an economic study? Or is there a rough guidance on what kind of timeline you're looking at for those studies?
I think we'll have to see what the assays are looking like. You know, have we kind of got to that critical mass here with this year's work? Or do we need to do another round of drilling? So I think I'll have to hold on that in terms of, you know, where we're at. But we do have a second project called La Plata that we're quickly advancing towards an initial resource. And I think that's probably one that we can have more confidence. We'll have an initial resource by 2022 on for sure.
Well, let's dig into La Plata. So let's shift our focus now from Canada down into the United States. You've got this 26-kilometer trend in Durango, Colorado. You've had a 2,000-meter drill program on it this year that you're getting results back from. Walk the audience through what you're doing down in Colorado and how things are going.
Yeah, this is a pretty exciting opportunity. I'm not sure a lot of people are aware. We've got the Kino District that's been our flagship. We acquired this ground down in southwestern Colorado in this famous, you know, mining district that's part of San Juan Mountains down there. Long history of silver mining, discovered in the 1700s by the Spanish conquistadors. They found high-grade silver in La Plata Canyon, thus the La Plata name. Mined, I think there were some 90 different mines and prospects in the area from the 1800s to the 1940s. Mining gets shut down in the U.S. in the 1940s, and basically we don't see the small miners come back after World War II. But Rio Tinto first, and then followed by Freeport, come into the district recognizing, hey, we've got these very high-grade silver and gold veins, very similar to Keno Hill, but we've also got an exposed porphyry system in the center of the district. So what's neat for this is that we've got this work by these big mining companies from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, hasn't been worked on before really since the last 50 years. We have the opportunity to pick this up and apply our expertise in both porphyry systems and high-grade veins. And so we're very rapidly advancing this. And with some 54, you know, now approaching, you know, 56 holes in the system, we've got an excellent database to build on. There's a historic resource that was put together by Freeport. So quickly being able to advance that to an updated, you know, modern 43-101 resource is going to be an important milestone for this project. And I think the market could well be surprised at the scale of the system, and it could become, you know, on par in value in terms of Keno. And, you know, that's something that would be exciting for investors, is to have that exposure to not only Keno silver and the silver mineralization there, but also gold and copper that could come along with this La Plata asset.
That's a good point, Greg, because right now I don't think you're really getting a lot of value in your market cap from the La Plata project at all. I think most of the focus has been on the Keno silver project, and rightly so. It's the flagship, and it's the high-grade silver hits there in a historic camp. But this La Plata project is also in a historic silver mining camp. It's just kind of been forgotten about, and you guys are reactivating the exploration here, and you actually have it further along and closer to a resource estimate, as you just alluded to. You've got four main zones. You got about 56 drill holes into this, but in addition to the precious metals, you also have that sexy battery metal, copper, and with these porphyry targets, and possibly multiple porphyry targets, this could be a very exciting project for the company that I don't think people are really following along with. So could you tell us a little bit more about the geology and what you're finding here at La Plata?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we've recognized in the industry is this close relationship between these epithermal high-grade silver and gold vein districts and porphyry systems. And in South America, where there's big exposure, they can literally walk from the porphyry system, which can be kilometers in scale, you know, in across these veins, and they can see this close spatial and driving relationship between those. So at La Plata, we've got an exposed porphyry in the center, which is high precious metals along with copper. The drilling to date shows the system starts right at surface and it's open at depth. You know, there's over a kilometer of vertical that's been tested and it's open, and it's at least a kilometer in strike that's been tested, multiple zones, and we're now seeing the potential for other porphyry centers. You know, porphyries often don't just occur in isolation. You'll see multiple ones. So we're developing targets all across this as we do the modern soil, geophysics, you know, satellite imagery, and start to process that. It's a multi-kilometer scale system. you've already got one porphyry identified. You've got all these high-grade veins that were mined just from the surface historically. You put that all together, and again, you've got an opportunity for something that combines both bulk tonnage for copper, silver, and gold, and high-grade silver and gold in these more structurally controlled parts of the system.
Yeah, that's the nice thing that we love the word clusters, because porphyries often don't occur in isolation. So you may have a few more porphyry centers there on the project to explore, and that will just be further upside. But I've got to also ask, since that Colorado mineral belt has been so neglected, let's say, over the last 50, 60 years, are there any other properties near you that you see being able to be bolted on? Or do you think you have so much to say grace over right now that that's going to keep you busy for a while?
Well, we've certainly got plenty to chew on with the land package we have. You know, we're the dominant player on this part of the system. There's a couple of other, you know, operators in the area. Other districts we're starting to see. There's a new mine coming on stream in the next district to the north. You know, people are revisiting these areas because in mining, you know, one of the best places to find a mine, as the adage goes, is right next to an existing one. Because if the geology was sufficient to have the right kind of characteristics to make an economic deposit historically, that's a great place to go exploring. And so I think people are starting to come back, particularly in the U.S. I think there's a bit of a renaissance for mining in the U.S., looking at this tremendous history in some of these districts and building on that, bringing these modern tools. You know, what happens when we look at these things with our modern geophysics and comprehensive systematic exploration tools? What do we start put together? And this has been, you know, one of the things that's led to some major discoveries in the region. Our sister company, Group 10 Metals, is doing that very same approach up in Montana next to the Stillwater mine. And, you know, this is something that can really be a very cost-effective way to quickly develop significant systems that are economic. And it tells you you're in the right neighborhood. You're in a place that makes grade, has scale, and has the potential to be, you know, a world-class scale asset.
Well, just before we wrap up here, Greg, I think I'd be remiss if we didn't cover yet your third project, which there is a little activity on, and that's your alluvial gold projects. And this is in the Klondike Gold District near Dawson City in the Yukon. So I guess you have some royalties on some of these areas. Just bring us up to speed on what's going on with your Klondike Gold District, your Australia Creek royalty.
Yeah, so this has been a fun one. I mean, I'm one of the original co-founders at Nova Gold, and we had a sand and gravel business in Nova Gold in the early days that really helped keep the lights on during the bear market. And so here in Metallic Minerals, we had an opportunity to do something similar. We had a large block of unmined Klondike. It's the largest block that hasn't been previously mined in that district. That district's produced over 20 million ounces of gold since the 1898 gold rush. Half of the Yukon's gold each year comes from open pit mines in the Klondike, and we're just upstream from that. So we have assembled this land package. We've got the permits on the lower part of this district scale land position. We've got three operators in now. They basically are started with exploration and bulk sample testing. And we saw a great program of drilling in the spring and early summer, bulk sample testing here into the fall. And at least one of those leases is now in position to start production in 2022, which would result in direct payments of royalties to Metallic Minerals. And on top of that, we've got lots of ground to be able to continue to expand on. We're working on getting the permits for those extensions. With operating mines producing cash flow on the lower part, this is really going to position us to be able to build this out. And this could be a fairly significant economic contributor to Metallic Minerals, potentially starting to cover our admin costs to operate as a public company. And ultimately, we see the potential to grow this into something that could almost make us self-funded.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. It could almost be like an ATM machine for the company where as you have these royalty payments come in, it helps with the G&A cost, but also could help fund future exploration at your other projects. So exciting to see that development, and we'll keep following along with all three projects, Greg. We always appreciate you coming on and updating our audience here at the KE Report, and we're going to be following along when some of those assays come out from the exploration programs and have you back on the show just here in a few weeks.
That sounds great. Really appreciate being able to join you today. Thank you.